Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Naked Englishman podcast. It's Monday the 15th of June, and I'm a bit confused because 1 o'clock says it's 7:50, well, 7:20 now, and the other one says it's 6:20. One's an analogue clock, and I'm sure that one, for some reason, maybe the battery is going, the other one is my telephone, and I probably need to try and find Julia's telephone to see what that one says, because my telephone does have strange times on it. I don't know where Julia's telephone is, actually. But anyway, it is a beginning of the week. It's a Monday. But if it is 7:20... Oh, you want to go out? This is Mo wanting to go out. All right. Get your hair on. He came in. He's been out already. He was out at whatever the time was. And he came back for some food. I'm not right ready to feed him yet. So now he's gone off in a huff. What am I talking about? I've no idea. Ah, here is Julia's phone. The mystery of the time. Let us find it. But if it is 7:30, you see, I woke up at what the downstairs clock said was 5 o'clock. Well, that may actually have been 6. I went back to bed for an hour, and now I feel like I've lost 2 hours because the... Oh, Julia's clock doesn't actually turn on. It's probably out of battery. I better put that on power-up mode. Oh, life is full of these funny little testy things, isn't it? Let's plug that in. Oh, yes. Well, I'm assuming it's the 7, which is annoying. Oh. She has got battery, but I don't understand why it's... Well, maybe I have to turn this... Anyway, it's her phone and... Right, sorry, I'm a bit discombobulated because I feel now I've lost 2 hours. I should have just stayed up when I was up because there's things I want to do. But anyway, I wanted to record a nice, relaxed Naked Englishman. The elderly cats. Yes, they're all wanting to be fed, but they're going to have to wait until I'm a little bit more compos mentis. So, a cup of coffee is required. Yesterday we were on the farm and we were tractoring, pulling out, was it yesterday? Was it the day before? The time is, I'm obviously... I need this cup of coffee, don't I? That's what it is. Or I'm getting senile. Yesterday, I know I put the pipe smoking video out. I remember doing that. Thank you very much. But we did do some tractoring. I'm sure we did the tractoring. And pulling out trees and various things. Anyway, I was editing it. That's what I was doing yesterday. That's right, because I was here. Oh, my goodness. It was the day before. Yes, so yesterday I was here and I was editing the English couple, and the pipe smoking video had been done the day before that and had been scheduled. It's all right. The brain cell has settled. After banging about the old skull going, where am I? What am I doing? It has actually settled. So we're fine. We're back to normal. We did go to Charlie's farm shop yesterday. That's why I was confused about where I was and travelling and things. And it is, and also, oh yes, and a couple of things arrived. That's what I wanted to talk about. That's why I wanted to have a nice relaxing Naked Englishman podcast in which, oh, excuse me, there's a sneeze there, but it's all gone in funny shape. I apologise for that. I'm not stopping and starting again because the day will suddenly disappear. I don't know whether you find, I don't know what time you get up. Obviously, I don't know. It's a stupid expression. People often say, well, I don't know what you do. Well, obviously, if you don't know what you do, you can't possibly know what the audience does. Anyway, but I don't know what you guys do, or girls. And I like to be up, especially in the spring and summer, when it's light. I like to be up when it's light. So that invariably means 6 o'clock. If I have had sufficient sleep, I would get up at 5, which I thought I had, and then went back to bed for an hour. Well, let's not start that little train of thought again. Anyway, and then by the time, say, 8, 9 o'clock comes, I feel like half the day's gone, and it bugs me. Not that I'm not trying to be busy. In fact, I'm trying to be less busy in these later years. I'm trying to be less busy, although I'm finding myself more busy, you know, with the farm business. It's not that it's a business, if you see what I mean, but it's a business. It's not a commercial business. It's just I'm busy on the, anyway, whatever. Right. A book arrived. Oh, a book and some tobacco. I gifted some tobacco. I was gifted tobacco by a lovely chap called Alistair. And it's called Red Lion. It's Rattray's Red Lion. And I did have a crafty smoke of it yesterday. And it seemed very pleasant. It's an English blend. And he was very generous in giving it to me. I had sent him my book, which he had paid for. But anyway, pipe tobacco made by hand from Rattray's, established in 1903. And it doesn't actually say, what does it? Oh, yes, it does. It says here, Red Lion. Oh, I can't read it. It's all in German. Latakia, Golden Virginia, Black Cavendish and Orient. An English blend. Huh. Well, thank you very much, Alistair. I don't think he listens to my Naked Englishman podcast. I'm sure he doesn't. Anyway, I will smoke that shortly. Somebody else, chap, I think his name is Mick Webb, although that might be his pen name, I don't know whether he uses a pen name, sent me a book called Smashing the Cage, A New Future. And he did tell me he was sending me the book, and it has arrived. At least, you know, a lot of people say, I'm sending you a book, and then they come, and I look at them. And I can't remember what Ed promised, because I don't always. He said, well, if it resonates. Mostly I say, you know, send me a book, and if it resonates, I'll do something. But it may not, because I've got a big reading list of books that people send me. But a lot of this stuff, the modern stuff now, it doesn't really interest me. For too long, it says on the back here, our world has been controlled by the darkest of greed. Now it is time for humanity to find a light of hope. We have handed the welfare of our planet, our children and future generations to a small group who arrogantly believe that they have the right to dominate, but they're wrong. A broken society must rediscover the courage to stand together and reclaim its voice. When people challenge systems that are no longer serving them, the future can become a place of beauty, fairness and possibility for all. The choice before us is clear. We sink deeper into a well of apathy that serves only the few, or we can take responsibility and take back control. Isn't that what I'm always saying? Take back responsibility. It would have been nice, Mick, if you'd signed the book. Anyway, 2025 this was written. And I'm just looking through it, so a minute. So, there's the introduction, there's the, the preface, is it? Or acknowledgements, preface, is it preface? Introduction, maybe that's what it is. Oh no, there was another bit there. No, that was the same. I just flicked through it. Introduction. Chapter one, structure. Sorry about sniffles. I'll read a little bit. see, you know, give you the measure of it. I haven't looked at it. It came yesterday, but we're running around doing other things. Smoking a pipe of the Red Lion. It sounds like you've gone to the pub, making sure our batteries were charged up, and, you know, just other things. And so I thought, well, I'll save this anyway, and I'll read it at some juncture. So chapter one here is called Structure. So I'm guessing it's not... I thought it was a fiction story with the stuff weaved in, a bit like mine, but I don't think it is. I think it's another... just, you know, somebody's thoughts type book. The basis of all societies is the same, whether the simple structures of the ancients or the multi-layered complexity of the present. Two elements must exist for them to prevail. There will be those who control and those who are willing to be controlled, the leaders and the followers. Each layer of society contains these interactions, and everyday actions occur from the most basic of decisions through to those that can have a major impact. Every area of life will, at some point, involve this structure, and regardless of size of action necessary, both leader structure... I read that a bit weird, didn't I? Every area of life will at some point involve this structure, and regardless of size of action necessary, both leader and follower must accept some level of responsibility. The position of leader and follower are interchangeable, a follower at one level being a leader in another, and so forth. Where the individual finds himself at any given time will depend on many factors: their conditioning, the level of challenge they are willing to withstand, their determination, and the flexibility of the environment they exist within. To ensure stability, a structure must have balance, and all involved must understand both the boundaries of acceptable behaviour within any system and the sanctions in place for those stepping beyond these. In the earliest herds, the controller was the alpha male who ruled by physical power and threat. Those unsuccessful challenging his control would do so at the risk of outcasting, or worse, well, presumably death, yes. Whether in the past or the present, sanctions are always based on some type of threat to prevent disruption, dissident, and chaos impacting a particular system. The design and delivery of the control and punishment will vary according to the directive of those in charge, but in all cases there will be an expectation of conformity in line with the standards set. Now, that's interesting, isn't it? Well, let's just think about that for a moment. Thought about it? Of course you have. Yes, and that is that a bad thing? I mean, there's always going to be leaders and followers. I think that's it's not necessarily saying it's one good or bad. It's just some people are easily led and want to be led and can't be bothered to. You know, it's the same as saying there's originators and or creators and the consumers. Some people want to grow their own food and maybe sell it on and eat what they do, and other people are just quite happy to go to the supermarket. And I think generally this is in a 80-20 percentage. 80% of followers, 20% lead. I think 20% do most of the work, 80% benefit from it. 20% probably have all the money in the world, 80% don't. I think this 80-20 percent thing is quite a well-established rule, if you like. It doesn't necessarily follow that it's precisely 80-20, but I think it's in that vein. And if anything, it would be fewer at the top, fewer, you know, could even be 15% and 85%, you know, that sort of thing. So I think that follows, and I just think people are like that. And maybe we're all a bit like that. You know, you could be the CEO of a big company, but it doesn't mean to say that you lead all the time. You may have to follow
what, you know, so you're there, you are directing everybody and telling everybody what to do. But within your family unit, you may be following what your wife is telling you. We're taking the kids to the fun fair today and you're coming. All right, righto, love. That might be how it works. Anyway, he's obviously going to go and describe all of this stuff in quite some detail, which would be boring to just continue to go through, but you might find that interesting. I don't know. I've gone to chapter four. Gone to chapter four because I mentioned the word consumerism or consumer. Chapter four, consumerism. We've been engrossed in our consumer society for decades. The desire to buy is not necessarily an ego response supporting a show or of status and worth. Other than for essential use, our spending is destructive and neglectful, and most purchases we make have a negative impact on the planet. The whole cycle of extracting of raw materials, the process of manufacture and the disposal of the unneeded takes without giving back. Despite the obvious damage being done, and without consideration of consequences, the habit continues. The tiniest, unnecessary purchase may seem harmless, but the multiplication of these over thousands and even millions of times of a solitary product causes untold harm. And when this is then multiplied by millions of products, the extent of the problem is clear to see. Decades of wasteful purchases have caused unsurmountable problems, and society continues to be encouraged to behave in the same way. Convenient truth and denial are powerful forces in a population that lacks responsibility. Two alarming statistics concerning textile and clothing waste show the growing problem. Earth.org reports that globally over 92 million tons of garments end up in landfill sites every year, and this is expected to be over 130 million tons by the end of the decade. The average clothing item is now only worn between 7 and 10 times before being discarded. Well, that's a very strange figure. Despite the damage to the planet, we are increasingly becoming casual discarders. Well, I can tell you, most of my clothes are worn to the bitter end because I just don't enjoy buying clothes. And I have shirts that are years old. Years! You know, 10 years old. I've jumpers that are 10, 15, 20 years old. I'm obviously an exception to the rule. I don't know that I believe that statistic. And that may well be making us, you know, terribly worried about things. Coats. I've got coats which go back 30 years. Probably, worryingly, I probably got pants that go back a few years too, maybe even a decade. I'm not one that really throws away the clothes. I don't buy loads of clothes. That's a very strange. That's fooled me 7 or 8 times. I would imagine that's more women. And I don't mean to be disparaging, but this isn't a blame at them, but it does seem that once they've been seen in one particular dress, you know, they can't be seen in it again for some reason. And that's the social media thing and society. But I don't think that's true. Julia's the same. She wears, you know, she has a selection of clothes like everybody else, and she wears a mix and matches. I think that's a very strange thing. There might be some people that do that, but I don't know that that's everyone. Let's have a look at one more chapter and then we'll... What was that? Trust, chapter 14. Some of this, it does sort of state the obvious, but I suppose in your setting up your stall, you've got to state the current situation, I suppose. Trust is the cornerstone of existence. It brings hope and comfort. And without it, there is no doubt and despair. It takes time to build, but can be destroyed in seconds. Once it's broken, it always leaves a scar. It is the fundamental glue that holds the relationships together, from the close personal to the distant formal, and is a personal quality that radiates from the individual, with those with genuine intent happy to be open to examination, and over time, individuals consistent with the truth become respected and trusted. In close personal relationships, there is a bond that develops where intimacy becomes a daily habit. This creates a sense of feeling where deceit can be detected, when changes become apparent, and whether these are actions or words, usual or bizarre behaviours, can trigger discomfort. The same process cannot be applied to formal relationships, therefore the test of time becomes increasingly important. So basically, as I'm saying, close people can trust each other because you are with them a lot more frequently. Formal ones, where there's either you're seeing them, you might see them frequently, but there may be a code of conduct, like within a corporate business, where, you know, you're not going to suddenly one day come in your swimming trunks and the next day your business suit. You know, there's a sort of expected way of behaving, and your levels of trust are different. It depends then if you go, say, to the pub at the end of the day, but you're only going to go with one or two people. You're not going to go with the whole sales floor, are you? Yes, I mean, that's all very basic. And then it goes into different obedient trust, convenient trust, satisfying trust, conditional trust, unconditional trust, I mean, and political trust. Well, basically, don't trust the... Anyway, I don't know what you made of that so far. I think it's probably unfair reading the first paragraph on each chapter, because he's just setting out his stall and you go, yeah, well, I know that. It is funny how... Excuse me, I'm all bunged up. I suppose you do have to write. I mean, when I'm reading, I'm often thinking, how would I approach this to write? And trying to learn from other writers, of course, because I'd like to write more than I am actually doing, because life, I've just, you know, got myself in a busy place, I suppose. And I suppose you've got to, if you're writing about certain topics, you are going to start by saying things which are the bleeding obvious, I suppose. If you were writing about a house, you would say, well, would you say, I'm writing about a house, would you say a house is a place where people live? You wouldn't need to say that, because that's a given, isn't it? But you might say, if you were writing about a house, you might start to put it into a box, even though a house is a box, but you might say it is a Georgian house, for example, and it was built in 1781, for example. And that it is a five-roomed house with X many windows, and, you know, you may list the... So you're telling... Well, I suppose you are telling something about something that you know, and clarifying what that particular house is. And in one sentence, you've given the date, which just confirms sort of part of the Georgian period, I'm guessing. Victorian house, you might say, was 1865, for example. And so, you know, some people might go, well, I'm not quite sure when Victorian houses the Victorian period started and when it ended, or the Georgian period started, and which George are you talking about? And so you could, you know, add that. But interesting. Interesting book. I mean, I suppose you set off and you tell people what they already know, I suppose, to begin with. But they often say teaching is about teaching people what they already know, or reminding people what they already know. And then I guess you add something to it. So, but I did find on all those chapters, I was thinking, yeah, well, we kind of know that. And I was waiting for something something new and fresh, maybe. I don't know. Anyway, it's called Smashing the Cage, A New Future, although where the new future is, there's the conclusion. I suppose I could read the conclusion. Oh, we're 25 minutes in, aren't we? Regardless of how we define the elements of the cage that surrounds, influences and controls our life, there is only one that is important, the one that lies deep within our own psyche. This reflects our attitude and acceptance and our apathy and denial, and can only exist with the will of the individual. It is how we view the world and how we adjust and adapt to our environment. But mostly it's about our integrity. There are those that are willing to smash the cage. These individuals have freed the minds from the programming and conformity that surrounds them, and we are at a tipping point where more are awakening, breaking free from the shackles of coercive control. Creating a society of worth will be the greatest challenge we ever face, requiring a level of courage that we can withstand the bombardment of pressure to surrender. But this will not last forever. The weakening of the old will allow a new unity to develop that becomes the foundation of the future. Anyway, it goes on a little bit like that. And I do agree with that. So I think actually, you know, this is probably, as I say, it reminds people, well, they already know, but don't necessarily know. I guess, actually, the analogy, I've got that wrong, really, about talking about a house. It's more like talking about, I think what he's saying, and I would agree with him here, and it's probably good, so that many people are may describe this wonderful room with wallpaper and comfy chairs and a television and food that just comes down a chute, and you know, and you don't have to do anything. It's all very convenient and everything's done for you. And yes, you pay a little bit for all of this, but it's so nice and pleasant. But actually, what you don't realise is that this room is in a wonderful landscape that you never see, because you're in the room all the time. Everything is done for you. That it's a cage, as he says, that we're trapped in this. We don't know we're trapped. I think that's the thing. That's what he's getting at. I think that's what. So you read all these things and you go, yeah, well, I know that. And then as you read it, you start to put pieces together and you go, crikey, although I know it, reminding you of what you already know, I didn't realise that I was in a cage, and that outside is, you know. And so the fear that people have is to leave the room, is to leave that door. They've been in it where they're convenient, and they say, no, don't grow your own crops. Don't you know, rock the boat. Don't leave the convenience of the room. Don't not use the NHS. Don't you know, leave your legal fiction name behind. Don't trust yourself. Don't trust your gut. That's what the society and the leaders are sort of saying, because they want you to stay in this room. And others that have been duped also want you to be in that room because it's nice and cuddly and safe, and they don't want to think that what else. But outside of that room, as I say, is this amazing adventure to be had, and so much more rewarding than being stuck in a room that everything is done for you, and that is where real life is. And I think that's what he's saying in this book. So actually, having read a bit of the conclusion, yeah, smash the cage, live your life, be independent, don't. Yeah, so I will actually enjoy reading that, because there's probably lots of bits and pieces in there that will also help crystallise my thought. There's a chapter on convenience, just as it is chapter 10. Convenience makes our life easier, and we can create the time to do things we wish to do. But as with our existence, but our existence requires balance. Controlled convenience can benefit us greatly, but excessive dependency on convenience will be to our detriment and will play a part in the downfall of society. I think that's absolutely true. Well done. Mick, I think that's a very good point, and I talk about that a lot. You know, all the time you continually feed a cat, the cat loses the ability to go and hunt for food in itself, when the owner dies, who's going to feed the cat? The cat can't go and feed itself anymore. So the cat dies. The cat's lost all independence. And we are at a tipping point, I think is right. Society is on the brink of something happening, but fortunately people are sufficient. Again, 20%. If you can get 20% of the population to wake up, the rest will just follow along. They may not like it, but they will follow along. Thank you for listening. I will talk to you soon.